Okay, great. Well, we do these informal conversations every 2 weeks. Our next PLC, which stands for Professional Learning Community for Environmental Workforce Development Job Training, it's going to be on March 14th, and we'll continue discussions with grantees, and then we also insert some open discussions throughout the session. For those of you who may have just been referred to the PLC and don't get post-session notes, just drop your contact information to Heather, and her email is hkballou, that's B-A-L-L-O-U, at eicc.edu. We'll make sure you're getting post-session notes and reminders for all of the things we're doing. Of course, these are sponsored by HMTRI, which we've been involved in the job training program since its beginning. And we have the annual grantee meeting. And if you're associated with the PLC and visit us, you'll be invited to that in August 7th and 8th and 9th of August. And there'll be some questionnaires coming out, some scans that I was earlier talking about. And those scans are going to be what you may want to talk about at the all grantee meeting. We're going to be sending out a scan that will be talking about your graduation dates and your capabilities. And even, for example, Memphis BioWorks, even though that you may not be an active program, you may want to include yourself into the scan. We talk about core curriculum. We'll be asking some questions about your core curriculum, any graduates, contact information. And what we do with that is we distribute it widely. And so not only will you be able to see what other grantees are doing when they're graduating people and what their core curriculum looks like, their contact information, but we'll be able to share that amongst all of the grantees. And we'll be sharing it with EPA regional coordinators and some employers. So that'll be coming in the next several weeks. We'll be reminding you about those. I know it's always a pain to fill out scans or questionnaires, but I think this will be very useful for you. Well, we always start these programs with news from Washington, see what's going on. And Heather, any news that particularly about the evaluations for the last RFP that went out?
We are still in that long wait phase. There is no new news from HQ. We did want to go ahead, though, as Mike was mentioning, remind you guys, please be sure to start sending us your information so we can get you guys registered for the all grantee meeting in August. Just helps to get that information compiled in so we can start gathering that information up.
It seems like we're starting early, but you can never start too early on that. And everyone that's on the PLC, whether you're a grantee or not, maybe a prospective grantee or trying to convince people in your organizations that you really should do this, certainly you're welcome to come. The all grantee meeting, 8th and 9th, and then there's travel days preceding and after the meeting. We have a lot of networking going on. We've got all the regional coordinators. We've got all the EPA people who are involved in this program. So it's a great time to ask questions. You do have to pay your way to and from the workshop, but basically all the rest of the hotel, we do some meals. We have snacks at the breakfast, and we do a working lunch. It would be dinner on your own. But for the most part, you could come pretty reasonably to Alexandria. And if you sign up, everything's set where it's going to be at the Holiday Inn Crowne Plaza in Alexandria, where it was last year. And I'm sure it'll be a very good investment, particularly if you're thinking of re-upping in next November for the next round, or if you're a current grantee, certainly. And if you're thinking of it, I think you could convince people that this is a really good investment, because you'll have an opportunity to go to the breakout sessions. More important, get to know your regional coordinator, get to know the other grantees who we lean on for help. In many cases, these other grantees can provide you some hints. And we'll be talking about the re-up and the RFP a little later in the year, but it's not too early to start now because of the requirements to make these grants fundable. So we'll be talking about that over the next several sessions. The other thing that will be in the notes will be there's a webinar tomorrow. It's by one of the TAB grantees. That's the Technical Assistance to Brownfields. These are we work with the workforce, and they work with the technical cleanup assessment pilots, revolving loan funds. They're going to have a webinar, and if you want to attend it, it doesn't really have a lot to do much at all with our grant, but the grants are very similar in the way you have to write them. And if you just want to get some background on the other types of grants, which are the technical grants and actual cleanups, revolving loan funds, assessments, you might want to tune into that. And to do that, you can, if you go to last week's notes or last session notes, 185, go under webinar, and there's a link, so you could click that link and register for this conference, and they'll send you an email on how to enter the conference. And it's not too late. You could do that this afternoon, and if you want to just listen to what these people have to say, it's peripheral information, not about workforce grants, but your sister programs on the technical side. So that's sponsored by South Florida Community Development Coalition, actually. There's going to be some other things in the post-session notes besides a summary of Janet's presentation. March 15th, for example, there's some Office of Environmental Education grants due. And these are nice little grants. They give money to the regions. They give a couple of very large grants and a whole lot of small grants. And the small grants aren't all that difficult to get. Again, they're not workforce development, but they're the types of grants that when you go to a fair, a 4th of July fair or something, there'll be educational materials and representation of EPA and EPA careers. Sometimes it's our grantees will get a few of these, and it could be synergistic to your program. You have the staff and the knowledge to put together maybe a display at a school, that type of thing. So you may want to check that out in the notes, and it shows you how to apply for those small grants that are awarded through the region. Well, today we're going to talk to Florida State College at Jacksonville, and this is a program I really like, and they were the risk taker that started. They've had five grants. They started with a stimulus grant, believe it or not. There was a time when they were trying to stimulate the economy back in 2009, and they called ARRA grants, and they awarded some nice hefty grants to communities to start workforce development programs, and their first grant was in 2009. But they never looked back. They re-upped in 11, 13, 15, and they were just awarded another one. Now, that's not by accident. These grants are competitive, and every year you have to go back and prove that you're better than all the other, better than at least in the top 10 or 12, than all the other grants that are submitted. And they've done very well over the years. And what's great about this and unique about this program is their work with tablets. And I've been surprised that all of our grantees haven't gone to tablets yet, but they fought for it. They had to get regional approval, and the regions decided to give them a try, and they've been going headlong ever since. So Janet Jefferson Hastings is going to talk to us about their program and how they got into tablets and what they're doing with them. So with that, I'll turn it over to Janet.
Thank you, Michael. Good afternoon, everyone. I am Janet Jefferson Hastings, and I'm here with Wanda Huntington Hodge. She is the program facilitator, and I coordinate the grant and manage the program for the college. Thank you so much for allowing us to share a little bit about our program. Just to give you some background information, I officially came on board with the college on May 1st. Of 2017, so I'm coming up on about a year at the beginning of our summer session 2018. I would be here exactly 1 year. But I was a partner to this program when I was working with the Jacksonville Housing Authority, and the grant that the Housing Authority had was a CDBG Community Development Block Grant, which we were trying to find participants to do a Green Jobs Initiative, which was difficult because 90% of residents are female mother with children that were not really interested at that time. And so I looked across the street, literally, at Florida State College Jacksonville to begin searching for a program that I could partner with. And I found this particular program, and I just fell in love with the program so much. I'm here overseeing the grant as we speak. So our program has been in existence since 2009, as you just heard. And we have a current award through 2017. And what we do in our grant, it's run much like the college programs. A person that is interested comes into the college initially to enroll with an application to our continuing education program of study. That allows us to enroll and register students to the coursework. And so that process, you must come through the college in order to get to our program. There we deliver the curriculum, and we have adjunct instructors that deliver the material. Initially, the program started out about 6 to 8 weeks. It was a daytime program, 8 in the morning to about 3, 4 in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. The program has since evolved. Right now, our program runs about a 16 to 18-week program. We have 21 certifications, all from OSHA, EPA, FEMA, Florida Stormwater, American Red Cross. And I'll tell you a bit more about the actual curriculum that we do use for our students. We also try to include much of the hands-on activities in our grant program. So, you know, everybody is required to do the 40-hour HAZWOPER, and we have them dressing out in the fully encapsulated suits, the tanks, and do those drills here on the campus. We also try to partner up with our local companies and agencies and organizations to provide more hands-on field trips. The Jacksonville Electric Authority allows us to come on board with the water treatment tour, and our students are getting the Florida Stormwater certification, and that particular certification allows them to actually deliver the curriculum to someone else once they've completed and passed the exam. Another partner is the Blount Island Marine Corps Terminal. And so students are able to get clearance to go out and see what they do out there and look at some of the tanks and things that you would not normally be seen as a civilian. And so that is pretty much an overview of how what we offer in our program. And each student is, you know, required to complete all of the classes. And so we don't offer an a la carte where you can pick and choose. You must complete each of the courses that are in our program to be considered a successful graduate. As far as the curriculum, we did have a change in curriculum with our recent award where we have added about 5 new classes to be taught as standalone courses. Even though it is a 16 to 18-week program, each certificate is a class in its own right. So the classes that we've added this particular year are ones that some of them have been taught in the past, but either we've brought them back or they may be brand new to the program. And then as far as eliminating some of the coursework that is just brought in and tied into the main subject. And so they're not losing that information. They are certainly still getting that information. The curriculum, though, is developed with our instructors who have worked in the field and are teaching the information. Much of their PowerPoint presentations, their handouts, they're bringing to the program. Of course, we do have to order instructional materials, and that's where in the beginning the textbooks were being purchased, and we still do. But there is an electronic version to the textbooks that we upload to our electronic devices. And so for someone who is wondering how did this come about, there was research and analysis done regarding the e-readers for the students. And the college found that it was all positive. And so they adapted it and began back in May of 2011 to use the e-readers. And so, of course, that was also considered in the work plan as well as the budget to readjust. And the program has been using the e-readers ever since. So someone that is looking to incorporate that in their program, some of the findings of the e-readers versus the paper book justification was that it does support green innovation by going paperless. We've all grown up on textbooks, but now we are a handheld society, and we and our children, we just typically have something in our hands at all times. And so we realized that giving the e-readers supports going green and not having to eliminate so many trees. Also, innovative classroom technology, which enhances the learning experience, being able to not only sit under the instruction and lecture, but also the same videos and the same PowerPoints that our instructors use in the classroom, a student is able to go home and take out their Nook, and they are able to replay some of those same videos. They are able to look at the PowerPoint presentations or the handouts just as if they were sitting in class with the instructor. It's cost effective. It's similar to the price of books initially, but of course, electronic information can be duplicated, you know, obviously without the cost of paper and ink. All of the books and references are just at the fingertips of students. Paper books, they become outdated rather quickly. And, you know, anytime a new regulation is stated by OSHA or what have you, that is an update. You can update electronic equipment rather quickly and accurately as well. It's a sense of empowerment to the students. It builds their confidence and their willingness to learn because they have this new technology rather than having the paper books. It also can be used in higher education. After the graduation of this program, many of our students go on and they decide, you know, this program opens doors to possibly a two-year degree, which the college does have an environmental sciences program. And many of the certifications that we do offer in our program have already been set up in an articulation agreement with the college. So that means our students can take, for instance, their 40-hour HAZWOPA or their 30-hour general industry, and it has already been agreed by the college to articulate and transfer those certifications into college credit. And so it does eliminate the need to sit in class in a lecture and lab situation when they already are receiving the credit for going through our program. So that is something that we are really hoping to increase. We are seeing an influx of students who are wanting to get a degree and coming through our program and using that articulation agreement as well. We also can use the Nooks as a job placement tool. Due to the targeted population that we outreach to, we are located in the urban core of Jacksonville, Florida. Many of the students that we cater to do not have access to internet at home still or desktop computers. Everybody is leaving the house, either going to a library to find a connection. This is a tool that someone can take with them and review equipment. It has Wi-Fi capability. And so if a person is even able to get a discounted internet connection, a lot of the free and reduced lunch programs do offer a reduced fee internet service. This service can be used to reflect and go on the internet to do job applications and things of that such. We also use this as a tool to keep in communication with our students, because we know oftentimes students may change their phone number often and you're calling and it's no longer connected. People don't tend to change their email addresses that often. And so when we need to get in contact, when we're doing our quarterly reports or what have you, and we need to see, are you still employed with the same employer? Have you changed jobs? Have you gotten a raise? Have you gotten more responsibility? It allows us to reach out to them and gather that information for our reports through the email versus then trying to reach them by telephone. We often send out alerts to our students as well. Those alerts come from our partners who are seeking employees. And so if someone sends out something saying, I need someone with a 40-hour HazWhopper, but they need to have a CDL, you know, rather than looking through our records to see who came through, when they came through, we can send a blast, an email blast out to previous graduates and say, hey, this position is now available. We provide a template on our e-readers for their resume. And so that template already has all of the coursework and certificates that they've already been through. And so it's very easy for them to upgrade and update a resume and cover letter. And so when we send this email blast out about a job opportunity, then the student can respond directly to the employer that's seeking the information rather than having to come through us and be a third party, so to speak. That pretty much it covers the justification of the e-reader versus the paper book. We did examine several different types of e-readers during this process, and the last device that we actually purchased was the Amazon Fire 7 with Alexa. And that is about 16 gigabytes. Now, we budgeted for the e-readers, and we were able to actually find those at a discounted rate this last time. You know, as technology evolves, it is a good thing because oftentimes something that is out this year is a little bit less in price. And so that has been helpful for us, because we're still able to give them even more space and memory and not have to worry about the cost so much going up. Problems and challenges. I would say that there's always a risk of attrition or non-return of the equipment, but the students, we sign a contract with them, and they're pretty good about that. We record the serial numbers on that. And they're pretty good, the honor system, on completing their coursework or returning equipment. We really haven't had to deal with that so much. Our recruitment and screening process, you know, we just like every other person we that has a grant program, we screen. We use an application. Also, for our program outside of the college, we do drug screening. We do a background check through our clerk of courts and Florida Department of Law Enforcement. The school's policy is not to have anybody that has a sexual predator status. We are kind of flexible with the background blemishes. If they're non-sexual, non-violent, if they have a traffic ticket or perhaps in the past trafficking, you know, that's something that we can work with because employers are able to work with it. We still reach out and have encourage our students to participate in job fairs and work with the local workforce board, career source here. We have a newly erected advisory board for our grant. We did meet on yesterday. And one thing that I can say, one of the employers asked about fitness, fit for work, and how we can better prepare a candidate for a job for that. I mean, we do a screening for the blood pressure and what have you when we're fitting them for the respirator and going through the 40-hour HAZ whopper. And so it is explained to them. Of course, they have to don the equipment. And so we do monitor their health and vitals during that time. But that's a newer request that we received from an actual employer about being fit for work and fitness and physicals and how we can help out with that. So that's something new that we will be exploring this year. Advice to new and grantees and those who are applying for the first time with the use of tablets, I'll close with that. Just be prepared to make updates as regulation changes and as your curriculum changes. As you're communicating with your partners and they provide you with feedback as to what's needed, you know, you have to adjust for that. And so your curriculum is going to address. So just be prepared to make those updates and to keep the equipment updated, the information that's available to the students. Collaborate with your grant writers. If you yourself are on the management side and you have a grant writing department and then you have instructors, you want to collaborate, make sure that the information is clear between the front line and those who write the grant so that in the delivery there are no hiccups or problems. A lot of times the grant writers are providing the information to the EPA, and then once it's agreed upon, you know, you have a binding and legal contract to deliver, and you want to make sure you stay on top of that in the beginning. Other than that, my information is available. I think they've made available to you. If anybody has any questions, concerns, just feel free to give me a call or email me. I'll be more than happy to help out in any way I can. And again, my name is Janet Jefferson Hastings. My email address is janet.jeffersonhastings, and that's with an S on the end, at fscj.edu. And I'll give you my direct number is 904-598-5646. Did anyone have any questions?
Janet, I have a question, a couple of questions.
Yes.
One, as I understand it, they get the Amazon 7s, Fire, and then if they complete the program, they get to keep them. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We do not recycle our devices, and for many of the same reasons that we want the access to be to available to our students that we recruit from the urban core, because they don't have access to this stuff at home, we do allow them as a successful graduate, if they completed all of their curriculum, they do keep these nooks. And so this is, again, a way for them to stay abreast of information because they're getting so much information. Our program is pretty rigorous. It is 21 different certifications plus the FEMA online. And so we want to make sure that even though they have 16 to 18 weeks that they're retaining this information, they're taking exams, and they're getting through, we want it to be available to them at their fingertips. We want them to go back, review information, even when they're applying to jobs. We want a person to know, okay, this particular job, if it's going into construction, if it's going into environmental industry or safety, they can flip back and be ready to answer those questions that might come at them during the interview time without wondering, gee, I wish I had taken better notes and things of that nature. They can be available to answer, reply to a job offer right at the palm of their hand, having that Wi-Fi on these devices. And so that's something that many of the students are not aware of that when they come to the program. And then when we tell them that these nooks are theirs to keep, they are really, really just overjoyed because it's just like Christmas to them. They are already at awe that they're getting so much, so many different credentials at no cost to them through the tuition that's provided through the EPA, but then they get this device as well. And so it is a brand new start for a lot of our students.
Janet, this is the other Janet in Santa Fe Community College.
Hi, Janet.
Hi. I use the tablets. I just finished my 5-week training cohort, so I'm still a little tired, okay? I use tablets this time because, you know, the way you guys had, was it you guys that recommended it at the last meeting in Alexandria?
I did a presentation along with another group.
I believe, and so I took you guys' recommendation, and so I got the, from this last cohort, my first cohort of this grant, I used the tablets, and I agree with all the things that you said. It made it a lot easier to get a hold of students. They couldn't say, oh, I didn't get it because, you know, I had the email.
No excuses. Right.
There was no excuses.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem I had was I had 25 people in my cohort, and I had to get rid of 5 of them, you know, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And so they didn't give back their tablets, but I had gotten them on the Black Friday sale, so they were like $50.
Yeah.
And when I calculated out what I would have spent in terms of all the copying and stuff, which would have been about $300 to $400 per person, it was worth it. Okay, just to not have to deal with it.
It is. We have an agreement, and I mean, even though a person signs an agreement, you're still working based on that person's integrity when they are. You have the attrition, and people do drop from your program, and so yes, that could be a problem where you are dismissing a person, and they just don't feel like they need to come back and return that product. But I mean, in the end of it. When you do lose that device, you think of the cost that you saved in the upfront beginning with not having to do all of the copying and running around and giving them a stack of books and manuals that you've created. So it is a win-win for the student and your program all the way around. I see it as definitely an advantage.
The other thing that I found was really useful is, you know, in emergency response and the environmental business, there's now a lot of apps that we use.
Mm-hmm.
And with the fire tablets, they could get access to the apps.
Yes, yes.
So I spent a lot. And the other thing that I found was really helpful, at least for about 5 or 6 of my students, was that they weren't very computer savvy. And I saw them, I was able to observe how much better they got at, you know, being able to use email and being able to use files
right.
and stuff
right.
like that. So I was able, you know, I'm able to, when the employers ask me questions about a student, I'm able to answer and say, well, this is what they were able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually for at least some of the environmental technician jobs out here is sufficient.
Yes, it's almost like you're teaching another skill unintended to be taught. But, I mean, yes, by literally having the device and committing to using it, because that's part of the agreement that we have them sign when they come in the program, that they are committed to using the e-reader and bring it to class. Because a lot of people are afraid if they touch it, if they open something up, they're going to erase it, break it. They're just that afraid of the newer technology. But they do become more familiar with this device and, like you say, the application. And so that's another job skill that they're actually learning, being able to interact with a person electronically. And so it's an unintended skill that the students will pick up that you won't get when you're using the books. So that's
there is one bad downside that I found, though. They fact-checked every word that came out of my mouth.
Well, hey, that's not a downside for them. Maybe you. But
I had to be so prepared for every class.
You know, that brings in another interesting challenge. Both Janets have the access to expert authority. So some grantees may be using consultants, and you would have to work with that consultant to say, can you find your own PDFs? Can you fill in the curriculum to do a course? So it's not the old traditional, okay, we're going to buy this textbook and we're just going to follow the textbook.
Right.
Both of you have the capability, whether Janet yourself, who is an expert, and Florida State College has adjunct professors who can write their own curriculum. So that seems like that might be a little bit of a challenge for some grantees.
Yes. You know, each program that has their instructors, are we still there?
Yes.
Our adjunct instructors are very vocal in what they're delivering to the students, you know, and they have to be because their credentials are on the line. And so that again, is, you know, why I wanted to bring that link into when you're, if someone is just now starting out, to involve your instructors. Their credentials are on the line. And so when you're writing these grants and you're taking all things into consideration, you know, we are just very fortunate here to have the staff and instruction that we have as far as curriculum. And it's good because it allows us to change when necessary without, you know, it may be more of an internal issue with the coding and the credentialing than it is to access the information.
I did have one person that I refused to certify in my cohort, and she's, you know, filed all kinds of grievances with the college, and the president asked me about it yesterday, and I said, I refuse to certify someone. You know, the way we've designed our program, you have to complete the whole program to get the certificates. We don't give them.
Right.
And, you know, when those of us who are professional, you know, environmental professionals, you know, CHMMs and stuff, when we're, you know, under the normal contract training, when we're certifying people, they're coming from a job already where they've already gone through a screening process. When I have these people who are unemployed and they haven't got that experience, I design my program, you know, that we're going to get all the job skills. And this person just didn't get it. She was dangerous to herself and other living beings, and I refused to certify her. She dropped out, too, which made it easier, but she's still demanding that she gets the certificates that she attended for. And I made a case to the president in this grievance that I cannot in good conscience certify this person because they didn't complete the program and they did not complete all the skills to do this kind of dangerous work.
Right.
So.
Agreed. Well, that's a very good point because they go to the job and get hurt.
Right.
There will be a lawsuit that they were not taught sufficiently all the health and safety aspects of it. So you're right on in terms of that.
Now, the woman was just batshit crazy. That's what her problem was. You find those out sometimes.
Well,
we can screen only so much, right?
Right, right. You can only screen so much. You find out some things in hindsight.
Right.
Well, in our program,
we don't do the drug test or the fit test or anything like that, Janet, mm-hmm. because the employers here, because of the way our OSHA and the way, you know, most of the people go to work for like Los Alamos or Sandia, the employers are already going to do that in their own programs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just tell them they have to study for the drug test.
Oh. Well,
so you don't make it.
So
it's not. Now, for both the requirement of graduation, some have random drug tests, but you can't graduate if you're positive on the drug test. That's Janet Nye County mm-hmm. is, they don't, that's not an issue. It sounds like Florida it is an issue, even to get into the program. Am I correct?
On the front side, you're right. We use it as a screening tool, and so we have our next cohort is going to start in April. We have already given out those LabCorp invoices, and so they're coming in now.
Oh,
so
okay.
We'll know before April who is dirty.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll want to call you and talk to you just separately on that, Janet, because
okay.
my next cohort is going to be in Española, New Mexico, which has mm-hmm. the highest drug use in the United States, according mm-hmm. to all the stuff. As a matter of fact, they went in. Somebody went in and did drug testing in the Walmart in Española, and they had to release everyone but two people of the workers at the Walmart. Okay, so. I don't know how to deal with that, so I need some. I'll probably give you a call later and talk to you about, you know, some suggestions or recommendations based upon your experience.
Okay.
You know, this is the real issue, and we need to have an open discussion about it because everyone does it differently. Some lets everyone in. Abro actually helps in rehabilitation. Some don't do anything. They know they're going to have to pass a drug test. Some won't let you graduate without being clean. So everyone has a little different approach, and it's kind of interesting to hear what everyone's doing. Even in states like California, where it's legal, at least marijuana is, but the employer won't hire you. So these are real challenges we have to face.
Yeah, this is Max from Oregon Tradeswomen here, and we're having this conversation like almost weekly about what to do with our students who are popping positive.
Mm. Are you getting close to any ideas or answers?
I mean, we want to stay as close to industry standards as possible. And as we ask our industry partners, they're just like, we're sticking with federal guidelines.
Okay.
As far as like marijuana goes, we've had some people that it does seem like, and we've kind of mirrored this, that if somebody is already employed and they show up positive for marijuana, not for other narcotics, that there's a lot more opportunity for working with that individual rather than just having it be a zero tolerance policy.
Yeah. Most of the places out here, Max, in New Mexico, you know, these people have to go through security clearances and stuff like that. And I know last week I had the recruiters from Los Alamos come and talk. And then in my employer panel, the employers came and talked. And they basically, at least in our area, with everyone, you know, we're like, you know, an hour and a half from Colorado, right? They're telling them, look, you know, we still have a zero drug tolerance, you know, in our workplace. So the students paid very close attention to that.
Yeah. At our current cohort, we had 27 women and two tested positive for marijuana. And this was the first time ever in our history that we decided to work with them. They still can't graduate until they test clean, though.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, we'll bring this up on another PLC because it's really a hot topic, and we'll be talking about that soon. I think that's it. Well, we promise everyone a half hour, and, of course, we took 45 minutes, but this was so interesting. And
thank you, Janet.
Janet's are doing are exciting, and I think it's the way of the future. Thank you very much, both of you.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Any other questions before we sign off? Okay. Well, we'll be revisiting this topic again. Well, thanks, everyone, and we'll see you on March 14th, same time, same place, and we'll continue this discussion. Well, thank you again, and everyone have a nice afternoon.
Good day.
Mm-hmm.